Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
How few of the human race have ever had an opportunity of choosing a system of government for themselves?
They're acting like they're bigger than government.
Mark Reardon.
Pay attention to science, 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 and science.
Whoa, whoa, slow down. I'm a scientist, and that was still fast.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Mark Reardon Show. My name is Mike Elam, and I am filling in for Mark today, so I'm calling it Mark 2.0. I'm calling it that because I'm about twice Mark's size. It's not that I'm that huge. It's just there's nothing to this guy. He's little bitty.
You know, that's true.
He rides that bike all the time.
He used to.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, he's still, like, super skinny.
Yeah, and he has the diet of a 5-year-old
Thank
too.
You.
He really does. He eats donuts all day and still stays that skinny.
See, this is what happens when you take your skinny butt to Florida, because we can just make fun of you all day long. We got 3 hours to just hammer on Mark Reardon today.
You know where it goes
that
bad.
That might not be enough.
Well, that's true. Is that since he doesn't like to eat, then he doesn't. Dave and I suffer.
Yeah.
Because there's no food here.
Right.
You see what I mean?
You know, I got to tell you, I used to enjoy on the round table, there was yogurt. I loved ice cream, man. Let's bring some frozen yogurt. I'm all in.
What happened,
Suddenly,
Dave?
I don't know.
You know, I'm ready to find him a sponsor. You know, let's go.
Right?
Let's bring that stuff in here. I'm gonna make this happen.
That would be great.
I want to get him like a shot sponsor or something. And I don't mean vaccine.
That's a good idea.
I mean, like, hey, we're doing El Hombre Tequila today on the round table.
Jeez.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine Jane after doing shots? That would be exciting.
This is
she's not obnoxious
idea
enough.
I've ever heard.
This is good time radio right here. Hey everybody, my name is Mike Elam. That is Dave. That is Sue. We are here until 6 o'clock tonight, and we have so much to talk about. We've got all kinds of folks who are going to be on the show today. Tim Lomar is going to be here, who's a prosecuting attorney from St. Charles. Scott Drochnik, who is the CEO from the Economic Development Center of St. Charles County. County Executive of St. Charles County, Steve Ellman, is going to be here. Wendy Hausman, who is a candidate for state rep in District 107. Nick Schroyer is going to leave early and go run for Senate, so we're going to have Wendy on to talk about that. And State Representative Adam Schwadron is here. I understand he could be doing it right now, but I think Governor Parsons is talking about, at the moment, the new vaccine incentives that are going to be announced for the state of Missouri. So we're waiting to find out what those are like. And as we find out more about that, we will bring that to you. But I got to tell you, so before this whole COVID stuff, I liked Rand Paul. I mean, I wasn't a huge Rand Paul, Ron, you know, kind of guy. Because you remember when his dad ran for president and he had the whole Ron Paul folks were everywhere. And
sure,
they were a different breed. God love them. They were kind of the conservative version of Bernie guys, right? Very passionate about this, you know, post-70s-year-old type guy. And they were all into him. And I thought Rand was okay. I got to tell you, his stuff with Fauci, I'm loving it. Did you hear the exchange that went on between Fauci and Rand Paul?
Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress, do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function. So what was, let me finish.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans,
right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially. You do not know what you are talking about.
Let's Let's read from the NIH definition of gain of function. This is your definition that you guys wrote. It says that scientific research that increases the transmissibility among mammals is gain of function. They took animal viruses that only occur in animals, and they increased their transmissibility to humans. How you can say that is not gain of function?
It is not.
It's a dance, and you're dancing around this because you're trying to obscure responsibility for 4 million people dying around the world from a pandemic.
And let's send Dr. Fauci.
I have to, well, now you're getting into something. If the point that you are making is that the grant that was funded as a subaward from EcoHealth to Wuhan created SARS-CoV-2. That's where you are getting. Let me finish.
We don't know.
Well,
we don't
wait
know
a minute.
If it did come from the lab, but all the evidence is pointing that it came from the lab, and there will be responsibility for those who funded the lab, including yourself.
I totally resent.
This committee will allow the witness to respond.
I totally resent the lie that you are now propagating, Senator, because if you look at the viruses that were used in the experiments that were given in the annual reports that were published in the literature, it is molecularly impossible.
No one's saying those viruses caused it.
It is molecularly.
Those viruses caused the pandemic. What we're alleging is that gain of function research was going on in that lab and NIH funded it.
That is not.
You can't get away from it. It meets your definition and you are obfuscating the truth.
I want everyone to understand that if you look at those viruses, and that's judged by qualified virologists and evolutionary biologists, those viruses are molecularly impossible to result in SARS-CoV-2.
No one's saying those viruses caused the pandemic.
Senator Paul,
we're saying they are gain-of-function viruses because they were animal viruses that became more transmissible in human, and you funded it.
And you
admit the truth.
And you are implying that what we did was responsible for the deaths of individuals. I totally resent
that.
Could
have
been. And if anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
I am not a damn liar. You are a damn liar. Those scientists know what they're talking about. Are you kidding me? Molecularly, it is impossible for that to happen. That's not what I said. I didn't. You're arguing against something that I didn't accuse you of.
Wow. They're must-see TV. They really are. Those two going back and forth.
That is the highest paid guy in the United States government right there. And that's his response.
He didn't answer the question.
Not at all.
He might as well be a politician now.
I think Fauci is doing everything that he possibly can to make sure that COVID does not die. Because you know, as soon as COVID dies, time's up, baby. See ya. There's your 15
irrelevant.
Minutes. He is. He will go. Did anybody really know who Anthony Fauci was before this?
Oh, no.
No.
I'd never heard of this guy before. I'm like, Anthony Fauci, is he a chef on the Hill? I don't know him. Fauci's, yeah. I had some great cannolis there. It's awesome. I had no idea who this guy was. Now, all of a sudden, he shows up. As long as COVID continues, he's relevant in the conversation. But as soon as we all agree, we're done. It's time to move on. This guy loses everything. So he's going to continue to argue and argue and argue to make this work. But it sure looks like he's guilty of sin on funding this stuff. He may have done it through a third party, but boy, it sure looks like there is U.S. taxpayer dollars that got funneled through all the way to Wuhan and paid for this research to happen. And I think what he's really worried about is, What happens when people find out I was the guy who signed off on that?
Well, it sounds like it. He's just dodging that like anybody. Just answer the question.
Oh, I don't think he can.
He can't.
No, because as soon as he answers that question, he's screwed. Sorry, game over. Thanks for playing. Let's see you in jail.
How long can you keep that up? I guess he'll just keep doing it. I mean, what's the end game?
I don't know that he has an end game, and I think that's the real problem. I don't know that a lot of the folks who want to continue to, and I don't mean this way, it's going to sound bad the way I'm going to say it, but the people who have a stake in COVID continuing, right? Those folks are going to progress this as long as they possibly can, and they are not going to let it die. They're going to do everything they can to try to, you know, keep this thing going on. We've got a Delta variant. Just hang on. We've got a lot of letters of the Greek alphabet that we can get through, you know. I'm looking for the Delta Tau Chi version, which I'm sure is coming out, because I think think that has beer involved in it. And you've got Senator Blutowski's is going to come out and start.
Oh,
start.
Good reference there to
See,
Animal House.
There
Loved
we go.
It.
My
Loved
gosh.
It.
Oh, my
I'm going to get around to it somehow. Anyway, just watching these guys go back and forth was really entertaining until you realize that's our government, yeah. Right? And that's when you start going, so that's what the greatest country that waves the freedom banner in front of the whole world has come to.
These are the answers we're getting.
These are our guys, right? And they represent both sides of it. I'm with Rand Paul on a lot of the things that he's talked about, because one of the other things that he talked about was the fact of Fauci completely ignores all of those people who have had COVID in the past and the people who have a natural immunity to that. When you start talking about people who some had the vaccine, but you have a lot of people who they had COVID. Did either of you ever have COVID?
I did not.
Mm-mm.
All right. So good for you. You dodged the bullet. Good for you. So I'm one of those people who not only did I get COVID, I got it and brought it home and just infected the whole family. Because, you know, we all wanted a couple weeks off.
Sure.
And we wanted to spend some family time together. And I had not had a chance to watch Tiger King yet. So it was a great opportunity for me to catch up, because I had heard, you know, what's the guy's name? Austin something. His song where he talks about tigers and meth make a straight man gay. Have you heard that?
Oh, no. It's a song?
Oh, it's a line in a song, but it's a Tiger King song. It's hilariously funny.
Now I got to find this.
So now Dave's going to be Googling all through the break, and he's been trying to figure out, like, what is the name of that song? Austin Foreman, I think, is his name. He's got some great songs. They're really funny. But he's got a line in the song that says, tigers and meth make a straight man gay. Because if you saw Tiger King, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. If you didn't see Tiger King, you're going, when's Mark Reardon coming back? I really miss. Did he have to go to Florida? Who is this guy? But you're seeing all this stuff kind of play out, and you ignore facts that don't fit your confirmation bias. And that's kind of where we've come down to. I'm not one of those people who think that COVID is a hoax. I think it's real. I mean, I was sick for a week. I didn't go to the hospital. And I got to the point where I think you and I were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
Where to go from the bedroom to my couch, I was done for a while, right? That you just have so much exhaustion. At least for me, that's the way it was. And I know some other people. I have a good friend of mine. He's a investor at Edward Jones. So Bob Ingert, there's your shout out. So Bob had it, and he ended up having to go to the hospital. He was in really bad shape. But he got that Trump cocktail that Trump got.
Oh,
when
yeah,
he
yeah, sure.
He's like, man,
back
I felt
on his
like,
feet.
Yeah, he said, I felt like I was going to die. I got that cocktail. All of a sudden, I felt like I could go run a marathon. I felt better than I had felt in years. I'm like, why didn't I get that cocktail? So I want Bob's doctor moving forward.
Yeah.
I got to find a new primary care who's willing to, you know, drug me up. It's basically all I'm looking for is the easy path in life. Try to get drugged up and try to see if you can survive that way.
So when you had it, were you pretty much the same pattern every day as far as how you felt?
I was for a week.
Okay.
And then, so Saturday, and I know we're almost done here, and I gotta wrap this up, so I'll do it quick. On Saturday, I told my wife when I was laying up in bed, I said, I think I need to go to the hospital. And she had heard stories of people saying, you know what? She felt really bad that night. We should have gone to the hospital, and she was dead in the morning when she woke up. So she's like, let's go to the hospital. And I said, honestly, I'm so exhausted right now. I can't get out of bed. Let's see how I feel tomorrow, and we'll go from there. So reluctantly, my wife said, okay. I think she checked the paperwork and found out, yep, she's the one who signed on the life insurance policy. So she was good to go. It didn't go well tonight. But the next morning, I woke up. Fever was gone. I felt rested. I felt good. I felt better than I had in over a week. So it shut off for me about as quickly as it came on. But for my family, they were pretty much good. But I know that was in October. In February, we took an antibodies test. And we found out we still had the antibodies in February. So we're like, hey, we're good, right? We don't need a mask. We should be good to go. But yet, Fauci says, you know, that doesn't factor in. It's vaccine or nothing. And there is no place for you. Who knows where we're going to end up with this stuff? But it is fun to watch our leaders go back and forth. You're a liar. No, you're a liar. No, you're a bigger liar. No, you're a liar because I've got a better accent than you do, and it sounds better when I call you a liar. This is, it's sad, but it's just how it is. Hey, coming up, someone who is not sad, although I get sad every time I see him on TV because he just looks so darn good in person, and I wish I had those manly good looks. Tim Lomar, who is the prosecuting attorney for St. Charles County, is going to come on. Pam Hupp is back in the news again. We're going to catch up with Tim and find out the backstory and kind of what's going on in the future with the Lincoln County Prosecutor. You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. You are listening to The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. My name is Mike Elam, sitting in for Mark today. And before we do anything else, I wanted to do this right off the top of the bat, and I forgot to do that. So I want to say happy second anniversary to John and Natalie Elam. So obviously my son and his wife. It's their second anniversary today. And
very cool.
They are expecting their first child in November.
Oh, that's exciting.
Congratulations. So
that means that my wife Jennifer and I get to be grandparents for the first time.
Very cool.
I hear being a grandparent is really cool. And people tell me if they could have done that first, they would.
I hear that from my dad all the time. Yes.
It's like, you know, I love you, son, but, you know, I'm here for the grandkids.
Right.
Don't you have something to go do? So there's all kinds of stuff that has been breaking lately. And one of the things that has been going on is Lincoln County Prosecutor Mike Wood has decided that he is going to charge Pam Hupp with a 2011 murder.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to find out this lady killed like 60 people. I don't know. I'm just making that number
If
up,
you watched the Dateline, you saw it, didn't you, Dave? I mean, it was
crazy.
Nuts.
Completely crazy.
Nuts.
So the guy who was in that Dateline story was St. Charles County Prosecutor Tim Lomar. And Tim is on the phone with us right now. Tim, how are you?
Mike, it's great to be with you. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
So you know that you have a good friend when he's on vacation with his wife and you say, hey, man, would you come on the radio and talk with me? And he says, sure, buddy, I'll make time for you and I'll come on and do that. And I'm on vacation, so whatever time you need works. And I'm like, OK, is Ty going to kill me after this or are we good? He said, nope, she gets it.
They got the beach chairs reserved, so we're all good.
See, so tell her thank you so much, and I apologize for interrupting your vacation. But when I saw this story come across, I went, I don't know anybody who knows this story better than Tim Lohmeyer. So for the people who may not be up to speed on this, can you give us just a quick, and I know this is hard to do, a quick background on Pam Hupp, and where do we sit with her right now?
Sure. Well, I can tell you, you know, I hope to stay in this career for a long, long time, but I cannot imagine a case that's ever going to be as crazy and have all these zigs and zags that this one has. But so I think really the best place to start is to go back to when the second trial of Russell Faria was held, where he was charged with murdering his wife. The second trial, he was found not guilty. That was, I believe, early 2016, possibly late 2015. So right about that time, the U.S. Attorney's Office had picked up the investigation and begun to look into it a little bit more. And Pam Hupp at the time, as many of you might know, she was considered to be a prime suspect who was never really investigated or certainly never declared a suspect by the authorities in Lincoln County. She was also involved in a civil lawsuit with the daughters of Betsy Faria over this life insurance policy. And the backstory again is just days before Betsy Faria was found murdered, she had signed over a life insurance policy and made Pam Huff the beneficiary.
Wow.
And so that was clearly, well, hindsight being what it is, that would have been a motive for Pam Huff. So she was involved in this civil litigation at that time back in 2016. And that's when our case developed. We were able to find evidence and prove that she basically tried to set up Russell Faria and make it look as if he hired a hitman to kill her. And the motive there was to try to draw attention away from her with the U.S. Attorney's investigation, as well as the attention from the civil lawsuit. And of course, after several years of litigation, we were able to convict her of first degree murder, and she's serving life in prison without parole.
So she's currently there. So tell me a little bit about what's going on with the Lincoln County prosecutor and him going back now and charging her.
Well, I don't have a real good handle on all the evidence over there, but I know Mike, I know him well. He's a good prosecutor, and he's not going to file the case unless he believes he's got all the evidence to prove her guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. But basically, she has been charged with the murder of Betsy Faria, which occurred about 10 years ago. And I believe he's seeking the death penalty in that case. So that will be really interesting to see how that all plays out.
So I'm hearing some crazy stories about that particular case and talking about the fact that Betsy was stabbed something like 33 times. And they're talking about the fact that this was more of made to look like a crime of passion as opposed to a crime of greed. But a $150,000 insurance policy signed over to somebody 4 days before you get stabbed 33 times just looks really bad. But we have the benefit of hindsight on all of these things and putting all of this together. So what are kind of the steps that you think we'll go through in this next process? Like, what will we see unfold as the next saga, this Pam Huff story? And I know we can't talk about specific evidence and things like that, but just the process that goes through something like this, because most people are probably asking, why would you charge someone who already has life in prison without the possibility of parole and try to get them executed?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, I've been around long enough to know that, there are times when you've got an investigation that's ongoing and you identify a suspect, and it's very easy to develop tunnel vision and not really look at all the circumstances, but maybe just focus in on who you think may be the suspect in this case. And again, I wasn't involved in it directly, but it would appear in hindsight that that's what happened the first go around when Russell Faria was charged, not once, but twice with capital murder. But I think moving forward, you know, Mike has the benefit of the history of the case. He has the benefit of knowing what happened the first two times around. And I think he's uncovered some evidence that was not either, not discovered back then or just not considered relevant. But I think you're going to see some new twists and turns in this case that we've never heard of before. So that will be very, very interesting.
Which is just amazing to look at this case. And Sue was talking about it a little bit earlier of, can this case have any more twists and turns? And it's one of those kind of things where you say, okay, I think I've seen about everything that I can see. But to your point, boy, I hope I never see another one like this, because this one just keeps having a life of its own and the story doesn't end.
Yeah. So it's funny. I was on the phone a few months ago with the producers of this NBC Dateline miniseries that Renee Zellweger's production company is going to make here in the next year or so. And I don't think there was any thought in their mind that there might be another chapter to this story that's yet to be written. But I think we're looking at another chapter right in front of us right now.
So are they going to have to put the miniseries on hold to wait and see how this plays out?
I would think so. And I think, you know, it's funny because Dateline, you've mentioned it a couple times. So besides O.J. Simpson, JonBenet Ramsey, Pam Huff has been featured on Dateline more than any other subject. And there's almost certainly going to be another episode dedicated to the latest chapter in the saga.
When I hear about this story, and particularly this part of the story, all I can really do is come back and think about Russell Faria and how horrible things have been for him. I mean, it's one thing to lose your wife. That's horrible enough. But to be charged for it twice, not once, but twice, and go through all this, and I can't imagine how he must feel.
You know, that's a good point because, you know, we talk about these stories like this and they're salacious and they're interesting and people just want to eat up all the details. But what you sometimes forget is that there are human lives that are directly impacted by this. Russ is a perfect example of that. Nobody's been impacted by this more than him. I can't even imagine what it would be like to serve time behind bars for, I think he served 18 months in prison on a case that he was not guilty of. So, yeah, his life has been turned upside down. And I can tell you, he was there every single court hearing that we had in our case. So, you know, a guy like that, he's got a lot of perseverance.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you saw this case all the way through. I appreciate Mike Wood and the kind things that you've said about him. And we know that he's going to see this through as well. But that kind of leads you, and just with a couple minutes here, just want to talk about real quick, not seeing it through is something that we're seeing in the region. And Sue, I know you were just talking about there was a case where the prosecutors didn't even show up.
Oh, there's multiples. But the latest in the Post is that Kim Gardner assigned 30 cases to a woman who had gone on maternity leave. And one was a murder case where there were three different opportunities that she was supposed to have an attorney show up and didn't. So they had to release this guy.
That's just amazing.
It is amazing, and it's appalling, and it's dangerous for everybody.
So, Tim, I'm not going to ask you to comment on those particular cases because I know that puts you in a bad light, and I don't want to do that. But I do want to ask you from a prosecutor's standpoint. Now, obviously, you know Mike Wood. You know other prosecutors. I know you've been involved with some national organizations of prosecutors. What is the industry, for lack of a better term, do when stories like this happen? Like, how do you guys as prosecutors around the region and around the country, how do you respond to things like that? Because I'm sure people bring it up to you.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, the first thing I'll say is, you know, we don't have all the facts. So it's really difficult to formulate an opinion and make a statement when I don't know all the facts. But yeah, situations like that in general, they do put us in a difficult position because I think at the end of the day, the vast majority of prosecutors who are in positions like mine, we're trying to do the right thing. And what may be the right thing for me may not always be the same thing for another prosecutor. But, you know, it's the same thing with police officers. If you've got one bad apple, it seems to kind of spoil the bunch. And so it does put you in a difficult position to have to more or less put yourself on the defensive and defend what you're doing. But, you know, aside from that, I don't know a lot of the details on those particular situations, but it sounds like an unfortunate situation, no doubt.
I think just looking as hand in hand, prosecutors and police officers work together so closely. And there's that element of trust that as an officer, you've got to know if you arrest somebody and you feel like you've investigated this crime, you feel like you've got the goods, you feel like you've got a good case, you bring it to the prosecutor and the prosecutor just lets it drop. I can't imagine how that wears on our police officers and what that ends up doing for them to say, do I really want to spend the time to go investigate all this? Because I know my prosecutor isn't going to go through with that. I would assume that as prosecutors, that relationship between you and the police force is something that has to go hand in hand and trust has to be there.
Absolutely. You know, I like to say that we're, you know, we're like siblings. We're in the same family, same team. We don't always agree, but at the end of the day, we're pulling in the same direction. I know when I've got officers who put in a ton of effort, a ton of time to put a case together, I have an obligation. I have a responsibility, not just to the public, but to that officer, him or herself, to do everything I can to carry it across the goal line. They do all the heavy lifting, right? So they get the ball to the 5-yard line. It's up to us to kind of punch to the goal line, and you know, that's what we do. And you know, it's a great honor to be a part of something like that. But you're right, there's a huge trust relationship there, and if you don't have that, things can become very difficult in terms of keeping the community safe.
Well, man, I appreciate you and how you do your job, and I appreciate you taking the time on vacation. My best to your wife. Please tell her I'm sorry, but you agreed to do this, so you're a great guy. I appreciate that. I owe you one. It's Tim Lomar. He is the St. Charles County prosecuting attorney. Man, enjoy the rest of your vacation, and we will see you soon.
All right, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, you're listening to the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. My name is Mike Elam. I am sitting in for the vacationing Mark Reardon today, who is down in the sunny beaches somewhere, getting into trouble, I'm sure, and having a fun-filled time. So I have Dave and Sue, who are here with me today, trying to make sure that I don't run the bus off the street. Or
so far, so good.
Hey, man, we haven't finished the first hour yet, so, you know.
Plenty of time to screw up. No, I'm kidding. You're doing great, Mike.
I'm sure Steve Moore's down the hall going, I've got a dump button. I can plug something in. We've got something recorded we can throw in there. Hey, I wanted to introduce you to Scott Drochnick. So Scott is the president and CEO of the Economic Development Council of St. Charles County. Scott, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mike, it's always a pleasure to be here talking with you and your crew.
Hey, man, we appreciate you being on. You know, I was in Cottleville yesterday, and I was touring through a new senior living community that's going on. It's just north of 364, and it's called Avalon Park. And Kevin Cast, who I've known for years, his group is building that area. And he was kind of showing me of what's going on there. And then he pointed to me right behind it. Jeff Kolb has got another development that's got 350 homes. And I think four different home builders are going to go in there and do that. I know we've got another development out past Winghaven on the south side of Highway 40 that's got over 500 homes in it. Another development that's out there out on Highway N that's close to 1,000 homes. And it's one of those kind of things where I'm like, Scott, I love people coming to St. Charles County. Where are we going to stick all these people? Like, we are trying to build homes so fast. And I'm just curious, is the business community keeping up with all of the home building that we have going on out there?
Well, Mike, if we have our way, we're going to annex all the way down to Jeff City or Kansas City if we have to. But there's still a lot of available land. There's still a lot of great land.
The mayor of Chesterfield's ready to join tomorrow. He's been saying that for the last 4 years. I remember talking to him.
We'll take it.
When we cut the ribbon on the new Daniel Boone Bridge out on Highway 40, he was the only member of St. Louis County to show up at that ribbon cutting. And he was talking about the fact of, hey, can we just annex Chesterfield into St. Charles County now? Because you guys seem to be doing the things that I'm trying to get St. Louis County to do. And I'm like, God love you. I'd love to have you come join. So that way I wouldn't compete with you as much. But one of the things that I love is going on in St. Charles County. We've got amazing developments that are happening. The stuff that has happened with the streets of St. Charles when you come across Fifth Street is fantastic. And there's so much good news that's going on there. But the one thing that worries me, and you and I have talked about this in the past, is for us to continue to grow, we need the region to grow. And I know Alliance STL has got a lot of stuff that is going on there. But I'm curious from your standpoint as an economic development guy for the third largest county in the state of Missouri, what do you see that we need to do as a community to turn this thing around and really make the St. Louis region, not just portions of it, but the region as a whole, successful?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I'd love to tell you I've got one magic bullet that would solve all of it. And I was talking with another media person earlier today about some of these same issues. One of the things that strikes me is that wherever you go, whether it's O'Fallon, Missouri or O'Fallon, Illinois, whether it's Washington, Missouri or Washington Avenue in St. Louis, people want a nice place to live. They want a little money in the bank. They want a good job, good schools for the kids, nice parks, safe communities. So it's in those particular areas that we're going to have to find some ways to work together. For a lot of local folks, and not people elsewhere, but local folks are very concerned, politicians are very concerned, and people who are impacted are very concerned about safety in the region. Thankfully, that doesn't come up when we're talking with folks around the country, because The same problems are happening in Atlanta or Chicago or San Antonio or Seattle or wherever.
Right.
But we've got to get a handle on safety in the region. And because we are fairly divided between politics, you've got the Republican sides and the Democratic sides, the conservative and liberal, et cetera, we're going to have to find common ground and potentially find some ways to compromise. I know that's tough for a lot of us, and it's tough for those on the extreme. But with younger generations coming up and new politicians coming in, and more baby boomers retiring by the day, we're going to see a whole new region and a whole new approach to things over the next decade.
You know, I was having a conversation not very long ago with some folks, and they were saying, man, just forget the city and let that thing go. And I gave them the analogy that I have of when I was in basic training in the Navy, they told us that you have to swim 200 yards. And the reason you had to swim 200 yards is because if you're on a ship in the middle of the ocean and it starts sinking, you've got to get off and swim far enough away to where you don't get caught in the undertow and the sinking ship brings you down with it. In St. Charles County, and I think Jeffco and Lincoln and some other folks over on Metro East Side, we've all been swimming upstream and we've stayed out of the undertow to this point. But eventually, if we don't get this fixed, to your point, we've got to figure out ways to come together as a region and be able to turn this whole thing around, or we're all going to get sucked in the undertow and we're all going to get brought down.
Well, I guarantee when we all go out of town, if we're from St. Charles County or wherever we're at, we don't talk about the O'Fallon Cardinals or the Edwardsville Cardinals.
Exactly.
We talk about the St. Louis Cardinals.
You're right.
And it's the gateway arch. You know, we are the go west young person and find great opportunities. But I have to say that in talking with site selectors and business investors, people around the world and around the country, a lot of what we're concerned about in the region is inside baseball. Many people around the country can't even find where St. Louis is on the map. So we need to get our house in order, but it's not something that the rest of the world is focused on and worried about. They've got their own problems in Chicago, San Antonio, Seattle, wherever it is.
That may actually work in our favor, you think?
Oh, for sure. For sure. You know, I'm not saying that the issues or crime or any of that is something to ignore. But it is a problem that everybody's facing. Unemployment issues and people not getting back to work, those are issues everybody's trying to find. Workers being needed, our companies all over the place. So our struggles are global struggles, they're national struggles, and we're going to have to find regional solutions, even if not everybody gets 100% of what they want along the way.
Well, Scott, you guys at the EDC are a great resource for people to find, whether it's SBA loans or what have you. You guys do a fantastic job. If people want to know more information about how they can engage with you and engage with the EDC, what's the best way for them to do that?
We'd love for them to connect with us online at our webpage, edcscc.com, or our Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, any of those things. We're out there. Or then give us a call at 636-441-6880. We'll help you. And if we can't help you, we'll put you in touch with somebody that can.
Hey, man, I appreciate you. I appreciate your crew and how you guys keep working hard. And I appreciate what you're doing to highlight the region. And eventually, we're going to get this thing turned around and life is going to go well. So, Scott, thanks for taking the time today.
Appreciate it and have a great one, everybody.
That is Scott Drochnik. He's the president and CEO of the Economic Development Council of St. Charles, Missouri. My name is Mike Elam. I am sitting in for Mark Reardon today on The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.